Good morning and welcome to Lopes on Movies. My name is Joey and I am joined today by Kyle.
What's up?
And Connor, live from New York City.
Hey Joey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you guys? You guys have a good week or whatever?
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, certainly has. It was a very movie-filled week.
That's what we like to hear on this here show, because that's what we do here. We talk about movies. And oh boy, do we have a couple of movies to talk about today.
Yes, we do.
So how about we get started with something that we alluded to a little bit on a previous episode, which is El Camino. Or El Camino. El Camino.
Is there a right way to say El Camino?
I was okay. I want to step back for a second and just say that when I said El Camino, I thought about the water planet from Attack of the Clones, Camino.
Oh, cut this.
This is not what the movie was about.
Oh boy. All right, well, we're off to a riveting start.
What if it was? We would have loved that movie.
El Camino, a Breaking Bad film. This is a sequel of sorts to the finale of Breaking Bad, the acclaimed TV series. So, Connor, how about you give us a little bit of a synopsis of El Camino?
I'd be happy to. Okay, so El Camino. Following the events of the critically acclaimed TV series Breaking Bad, El Camino follows Jesse Pinkman, the former partner in crime to the series' infamous anti-hero Walter White, played by Bryan Cranston, as he attempts to escape to freedom as the subject of a massive police manhunt. The film was written and directed by the series creator Vince Gilligan, stars Aaron Paul as Jesse, and there are many, many other characters from the original series in this as well. But if you look at the billing, they only put Aaron Paul, because I think they want to surprise you with some of the people that they get.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so Kyle, what did you think of El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie?
First things first, does this have the Breaking Bad movie subtitle? Like, is that part of the
title? Yes, it is, actually. It does. Wow. That's why we've been saying it. I wouldn't have otherwise.
Okay, I was just curious. So this movie made me happy. And as you guys know, I'm rarely happy. Because I was so sure that this movie was going to be some awful cash grab and just be, you know, bland, like throwing characters that don't need to be thrown in, all that stuff. But this movie ended and I was like, this is exactly what I wanted from the second that this movie was announced like a year ago or whatever it was. Because it just shows how great of a show Breaking Bad was and how even like, was it like 5 years since it's over? Six years? Yeah. All the characters are still great. And I don't want any more Breaking Bad, but this is a great way to end the series, I think.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I couldn't agree more. I think we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago where we were a little bit afraid that it was going to be a cash grab, but that we heard that Vince was like, he said that it came from a place of just he wanted to tell this story. It was something that was kind of eating at him. He was like, you know what, this could be cool. I think we could do a good job with this. And of course, Sony and Netflix were happy to help him with funding it.
That's what made me a little scared. Yeah, well, everyone was like dying to get a hold of this.
Exactly. So, but even with that, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that El Camino is going to be good just because it came from a good place. Because you always have, like, what I always say with these kinds of revival things, and that's what this is, really. I mean, it's been 6 years, so you could call this a revival of Breaking Bad in a way, or a reunion almost. The problem that these usually have is what I always call the getting the gang back together problem, where it always, what often happens is that the new content feels like a weird parody of the original, even though it has the original creators involved and the original actors, because they've had so many years of separation from the original show that it ends up usually feeling like too nostalgic and forced, and it's like they're trying to replicate the past instead of creating something like really new and in the moment, which is what it was when it was originally airing, obviously. So it's really hard to create something that feels really authentic to the series legacy when it's been so long. So the best compliment I can say about El Camino is that it feels extremely authentic. At no point watching this I feel like it just seemed like the guys that made Breaking Bad going back to it and making some nostalgia piece that reminded you of it but really doesn't need to exist. It felt like a genuine continuation of the story, almost as if it hadn't been 6 years. Like, the only thing that felt like it had been 6 years is that some of the actors look noticeably different, particularly Jesse Plemons as Todd.
Yeah, we're looking at you, Jesse Plemons.
Connor, what did you think?
Okay, so guys, I think I'm going to have to be the dissenting opinion here, which is why I guess it's good. We rarely disagree here.
Oh, wow. But, oh man.
Yeah, okay, so I totally agree with what you said. It feels like Breaking Bad. It feels like the correct tone. You know, the characters, you know, it seemed like we picked right back up. And I think the one of the really cool things, too, is they recreated the last shot right from the end of the last scene that you see Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. And they pick it up right from, like, the start in El Camino, and it was actually really cool to see that it looked the same.
Oh,
and
yeah, for sure.
It got you excited to get right back into that world. Mm-hmm. So, I just felt that this story was unnecessary. Like, I don't think I needed this, you know?
Sure.
Like, I don't think this tarnishes Breaking Bad at all. It definitely doesn't add anything to it, I would say. Mm-hmm. It felt like something that I didn't need to see. Like, basically, any, like, casual fan of the series could assume everything that happened in the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are other things that I could tell you that that bothered me. One being that since there is no real antagonist left in the series, because there wasn't any with the way Breaking Bad ended, and we're going to stand clear of spoilers in case anyone wants to ever watch Breaking Bad that hasn't yet, because you absolutely should if you haven't. If you're
what's taking you
TV
so long,
at all.
You know,
exactly.
It's been quite a while at this point.
You need to watch it though, but there are no like villains left or antagonists, so they had to create one. And I thought the one that they created was kind of silly. Now, I think that stuff that they did with them was fine, but I am someone that thinks that the story was too simplistic. It was not needed as something that. For Vince Gilligan to come and say that he had a story that was, you know, that he wanted to tell to really send off Jesse's story, to me, I think that I'm in the same place with Jesse that I was from when Breaking Bad ended. I feel that he would have gone and done exactly this. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, call me the dissenting opinion. It was good. There were things I definitely liked. The characters Skinny Pete and Badger were excellent.
It's always good to see them back.
You know, everyone knows that those two are going to be in there. There's a ton of characters that were great to see, but you know, for me, the story just didn't feel warranted.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Interesting. I mean, okay. Well, I think your mileage will vary depending on what you kind of wanted out of this. If you wanted anything, like to me, I wasn't expecting much from this, and can't say that I really wanted it to be more ambitious, because if you like, everybody says Breaking Bad has such a great ending, right? And I think Breaking Bad's ending is pretty solid. And thematically, like, everything that was going on in Breaking Bad is concluded perfectly with that ending, right? So what more is there to do after that that's going to feel like a better conclusion? The answer is nothing. Like, you really can't do anything that's going to like fix the ending of Breaking Bad, because there was nothing that needed to be fixed or explored further. And like you said, like, this story with Jesse is basically like at the end of Breaking Bad, there you'd use your imagination to guess where Jesse might have gone, and this story that they're telling with El Camino, basically, you know, I'm sure your imagination isn't too far off from what this was. But that being said, that didn't really bother me, because all this really needed to be to me was a fun thriller where we see a little bit more after what happened, because you could call the ambiguous ending with Jesse a loose end. And personally, I felt like while you could very easily extrapolate, like, oh, Jesse probably would, you know, do this after the ending, I did feel like him as a character didn't get a huge conclusion in the same way that Walter White did. So this just kind of puts the spotlight back on Jesse a little bit. And
well, I agree with you, but you know, the show was about Walter White, you know?
of course, and that's why this is like a
postscript.
I thought
that Jesse did get the kind of, he goes through a lot, and I think he gets, you know, everyone knows how it ends with Jesse, but a lot of the movie just felt like overkill. It was things that I got already. Like, you brought up the character Todd, who mm-hmm. is probably one of the biggest like sociopath villains in the series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and he looks very different.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
He's getting a fat shamed on the internet, which
is really?
Very
that's
bad,
too bad,
guys.
That's too bad.
It's very bad.
He's not even that fat. He's just bigger than he was.
Yeah. I mean, it's been six years. The guys look older. I don't know.
Exactly. He looked noticeably different. But I get it that the guy was, you know, a bad guy and he did bad things. Like at some point it felt like overkill to me. Like I didn't need these flashback scenes. They weren't adding anything for me. It felt like a slog. I didn't enjoy them. Like it just, there was a lot of Todd too.
Yeah, there was a lot of Todd.
It was all done in flashback. And we know what happened to Todd by the end of Breaking Bad.
We do.
It didn't seem necessary to me. It was a lot of this, like this whole thing didn't.
I was just thinking of this as purely an exercise in like thriller filmmaking within the same kind of like style that Breaking Bad had kind of developed over the course of a series. Like it feels like a long episode of Breaking Bad that is basically about a very simple, I have to, you know, scrounge together enough money to get out of here before the cops get me story. And a lot of the set pieces I thought were really fun, and that's really kind of all I felt like I needed from this, you know? Like, again, like, you could call it unnecessary, but to me, like, the problem comes if this thing comes out and then tarnishes the legacy of what came before.
Which it certainly doesn't. And I'm not going to say that. No.
Like, this is
it
basically
just add
just
to it.
It's just a fun additional thing, really. That's the only thing I could really think of it. And I didn't find it boring or anything like that either. So, I mean, it's going to depend, I guess, on whether or not you think the scenes and set pieces and things that happen in this are fun enough to justify just kind of hanging out with these characters again for a little while. And for me, that was enough. I mean, I don't really think that it needed to be more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. There's obviously very awesome sequences. Like, I think my favorite one is probably one of the, you know, obviously Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, which is the spinoff series, are very great with the montage sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one that you saw, like, of the apartment where you see Jesse searching around,
yeah,
was an awesome montage, which is, mm-hmm. you know, classic Breaking Bad,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Vince Gilligan and co.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was awesome. There was, you know, seeing all the characters that they brought back and certain, you know, even, you know, one character who, you know, very sadly died on the day that it was released,
I forgot about that. Robert Forster. That's such a
Robert
shame.
Robert Forster. Yeah, it was very sad to see that, but he was great in it too. It just kind of goes to, made me like feel sad actually finding that out, because I wanted to look up something about how it was funny when I was watching with my roommate. I was like, oh, you know, this character's probably going to be back. You know, Robert Forster mm-hmm. played, and then, you know, like just after the movie, just looked him up and then see the article, the headline of he dies.
Yeah, I literally found that out like seconds after the credits started rolling.
Just like, oh my god,
yeah.
gave us the bad news.
Really a shame, because he's a phenomenal actor and really elevated everything that he ever did.
Okay, one thing I want to know from you, from both of you, what did you think of the fact that there was no antagonist, so they created one, and the one that they created, did you feel like that character needed,
he
was the adversary guy?
That character justified his existence in the movie's climax to me, which I loved. Like, there's nothing interesting mm-hmm. about the character really, but I think he fits in very well with the general tapestry of the Vince Gilligan like crime Albuquerque world, and his finale was wonderful, I thought.
We definitely will not spoil it, but that is a fantastic scene.
I was debating over whether or not I wanted to spoil it just because I love it so much, but we'll just say, even if you don't love this movie, there's at least one scene that I think you'll find is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was almost bordering on silly, but
but that was fine. I was down with it, 100%.
I would agree. I'm not going to say this was a terrible movie or anything by that means, but I do think that it is just fine.
Sure.
I think there was one article I read that this movie broke no new ground, and mm-hmm. I think that is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tarnish the legacy of Breaking Bad in any way, but it certainly doesn't add to it. You know, it does is Better Call Saul, the spin-off companion series starring Bob Odenkirk, who was their like shady lawyer. That show, I think, is a much better companion piece to Breaking Bad than this, and actually has a story that is more interesting, I would say.
Well, I think it's safe to say that, you know, El Camino is pretty much strictly for Breaking Bad fans anyway. I mean, I don't think it's not just because it's an exercise in nostalgia that only fans could possibly like, but it picks up right where the series left off. Yeah. So there's a lot of context that you'll just pretty much be completely lacking, even though the plot's pretty simple.
Yeah, but don't start with this if you're getting into Breaking Bad.
Yeah, definitely don't start.
It's a really bad decision right there.
But I mean, either way, I liked it well enough. I would recommend that people go check it out if they're fans of Breaking Bad. It's not gonna blow your mind, but I think it will. It's a fun way to go back to that world and revisit some of those characters, I think.
Okay, so then at the end of the day, we all kind of agree. Then.
Yeah, more
I thought that it was, yeah, it was a little bit. I didn't hate it. I just thought that you guys loved it like tremendously. After we talk about it, it seems like we're more.
I mean, I really liked it, but I also like agree with everything that you said.
Yeah,
like,
it's slight, but you know, I was okay with that. That's all I wanted. That's all I expected, and it's all you guys listening to this show should expect too. All right, let's move on, guys. We got one more movie we got to talk about, and man, are we excited to talk about this one. So
we are.
Let's get into Gemini Man. So let me give you a synopsis of Gemini Man in case you are not aware of this incredible film. An over-the-hill hitman faces off against a younger clone of himself. That is the premise. It was directed by Oscar winner Ang Lee. And was written by like five people. I didn't bother checking. It was too many people, but
it's always a good sign.
If one of those people was everyone's favorite, David Benioff of Game of Thrones.
I was so amazed when I saw his name.
Oh, I know. When that name flashes up, you get the chills.
And not for a good reason.
Right.
So it stars Will Smith, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Clive Owen, and Will Smith. Again, playing his younger self with very interesting de-aging technology.
For most of the movie.
So, Connor, I want you to tell me what you thought of Gemini Man.
Okay, Gemini Man. So, I want to preface this with the fact that there are a couple ways to see Gemini Man.
There are.
You know? Yes. So, I was, I saw this yesterday. And I saw it after a long day of watching football and having a few drinks. So you know, so I did go see Gemini Man after
that.
You're
in a good
mood.
And I saw
it. Yeah. So I was in a good mood at that point. So I saw it in 3D HFR. And Joey, maybe for the folks at home, what is HFR?
So as any movie person is aware. Most feature films are shot in 24 frames per second, so that's 24 images a second appear on screen. High frame rate movies are where the filmmakers decide, you know what, 24 frames isn't enough. We got to bump those numbers up. So the first major film that did a high frame rate thing was The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey by Peter Jackson. That was filmed at 48 frames per second, I believe. They doubled the 24 frames, and I believe the vast majority of people thought it looked absolutely terrible. So they pretty much stopped advertising the high frame rate thing after the sequels for the Hobbit movies were coming out. But for some reason, high frame rate didn't die with those movies. I think I remember an interview with James Cameron like shortly after they came out where he was like, you see, guys, this was the problem, you know, like 48 frames, that's not enough. You got to bump those numbers up even higher for people to like it. You got to go straight to 120 frames per second. That's the only way it'll look
good
to
people. That's the sweet
spot. That's the sweet spot. It's like 24 is good. Anything higher than 24 is bad until you hit 120. And then, only then, are you really watching a movie. So Ang Lee apparently became a devoted follower of this idea because he became... Well, his last movie, I think Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, it was called, was also shot in high frame rate at 120 frames per second, I believe, in 3D, as was this film, Gemini Man, 120 frames per second, 3D. The funny thing is you can't actually really see it in 120 frames per second unless, I think there's 12 theaters in the country that actually are equipped to show the movie in 120 frames per second, 4K, 3D. But most theaters do offer a high frame rate option, which I believe is 60 frames per second. So you're getting half of 120, which James Cameron would say is not good enough. But nonetheless, I think that's what the majority of people that see the high frame rate version are going to get. Me and Kyle, of course, saw it in 2D because, you know,
the inferior way of watching it.
Ang Lee would be very disappointed in us. But Connor, I wanted to make sure that you saw it in high frame rate so we can kind of compare and contrast. So please continue.
Well, what can I say? I guess James Cameron's right, because I did not enjoy the high frame rate picture.
You only saw it in 60. It had to be 120.
Yeah, I only saw it in 60. I didn't see it, you know, the frames. It was lacking frames, I guess.
It was lacking frames. That's too bad.
Okay, so Gemini Man, you know, the other thing with this 3D high frame rate thing is after you see, like, the initial, like, openings where the studios all have their little, like, blurbs, their little, you know, segment, and you see, like, the 3D, you're like, wow, okay, all right, I see that. And then there's the movie starts, and then you get over, you have to get through the initial, like, adjustment for the high frame rate 3D, and in that moment, I like to call that moment the, are you going to throw up or not spot section? And especially after you have, like, a few drinks.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I got through it, you know, so then it was like watching a movie. Yeah. And, you know, there's a couple of moments here and there where things are kind of, like, coming at you in 3D that, like, there's bottles at one point that are smashing and they're going, like, kind of 3D. Look like they're coming at you. Okay. Gemini Man. This was the most, this is a classic, just simple story. It's exactly what you are expecting. It's Will Smith and a younger version of Will Smith who are going at it and, you know, have to, you know, see, and then you see what happens there, right? Against an evil government organization that you never really specifically know who it is, except that their project Gemini. We're all over the world in this movie. There was a point where, because I saw this with with Mark, you know, our other guy who does the show with us sometimes, right? And I have, you know, as sometimes I tend to do, I took a nap probably in after like the first half hour, right? So after the point where I was in the movie, I think they were in Holland, maybe. And when I woke up, they were in, like, the catacombs, which I don't understand. Well, I was like, how did we get here?
Well, and, typically when you fall asleep during movies, you do miss some things, so I could understand.
Yeah, but I asked him, like, why are we here? And he said, I don't know. Why are we all...
Well, Connor, I mean, you have to understand, like, sometimes when you know, spies have to travel between different countries... They're typically going to end up in cities that offer tax rebates for film crews. It tends to be a pretty common occurrence that that's where spies also hang out.
Oh, interesting. Agents
and stuff.
Okay, thank you for educating me, because now it all makes sense. I don't know. Some of the fight scenes were okay, I guess. The digital de-aging of Will Smith for the younger version, it was pretty much incredible, I thought. I'm glad you
said that, because I wanted to talk about that more than
It didn't look bad until the very end, I thought.
The last scene looks terrible.
Yeah, maybe like the last act, I think. It didn't look great to me, but when it was moving quick and the scenes were dark, I think it looked pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, as a movie, I think Gemini Man ranks up there, I think, with Jack Reacher 2 for me.
In quality?
Yeah, because if you remember, like, way back in the day when we saw Jack Reacher 2.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And I can't imagine anybody listening to this saw Jack Reacher 2. But we saw Jack Reacher 2, the sequel to Jack Reacher. I think it was called Never Go Back or
something like that.
And I remember thinking, you know, this is the most generic movie ever, and it's really not that good. But I liked it. Yeah, you know. And Gemini Man's like the exact same thing to me. I'm watching this and I'm like, you know, there's no surprises here. I know what's going to happen. But I will say I was pleasantly surprised that there were no dumb twists. Like there was, I think the best thing I can say about Gemini Man outside of the de-aging technology, which we'll get to in a second, the best thing I can say is that there was nothing in it that made me so angry I wanted to leave the theater. And I, you know, that's something that in these generic dumb thriller movies, sometimes you get that, you know? Like, do you remember the Da Vinci Code movie Inferno?
Oh.
Remember how we saw that too? We saw a lot of bad movies a couple of years ago.
Sadly, I missed out on Inferno week.
Yeah, that movie had like a twist that was so frustrating and obvious and terrible that I was like, do I got to sit through the rest of this? Do I really have to? There was nothing like that in Gemini Man. It's exactly what it's advertised to be.
Very straightforward.
A generic, boring action movie. And sometimes that's what I'm in the mood for, you know? But
yeah, I mean, I agree, I guess.
But beyond that, the de-aging technology I thought was very surprising, because the effect looks kind of disconcertingly good. I think when the younger Will Smith is supposed to be 23 years old, and obviously Will Smith is like 70 now, like however old he is.
I think he's like 50. 70.
I mean, that's even part of the movie where he keeps saying he's like 50 years old.
Oh, yeah. That is exactly what the reason they did that, Kyle, and they pointed out also that the younger version was 23, because this movie was designed around just the fact that they could digitally de-age Will Smith.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
The script and story was designed around that. So this entire purpose was to showcase their digital de-aging.
And that's they did a great job, all right? Because I was sitting there for the first part of the, like when young Will Smith is first revealed, I was sitting there staring at his face, trying desperately to see it as a digital effect.
You're looking for the flaws.
I was looking for the flaws, because how could you not? I mean, when you know that it's like a digital de-aging technology, like it's impossible to get that out of your brain where you're like, okay, I have to see the flaws here. But I could not see anything wrong with it. Until the very last scene, which looks terrible, but the vast majority of the movie, it looked really, really good, and you just stop noticing it. You just kind of believe it at that point. So I think
there is part of it, like I was saying, that it looks better in like the dark scenes.
And most of
the movie is at night for the most part, the scenes where younger Will Smith, the clone, it's like during the day there's like a mask on, or he's wearing like a helmet, so you can't really see his face as much. So
let's wrap this up, because I really don't think we all have that much to say about Gemini Man.
Pretty much echo what you guys are saying.
But I think, you know, the action's all right. Like there's a motorcycle chase that's pretty chill. It's kind of weird that an Oscar winner made this movie. It makes you wonder, like, what is he doing, you know? Like Ang Lee made like Brokeback Mountain and like Life of Pi. Like, this guy, what is he doing making Gemini Man? But at the same time, maybe the digital de-aging technology was only done well because we had a competent filmmaker at the helm. Who knows?
Could be.
But the movie itself is, you know, it's the perfect movie for if you have one of those like movie subscription services, like the Regal Unlimited or the AMC one, where you just kind of want to see a movie. You know, you could do worse. Like, I think that Jexy movie is out now, if you remember that. The comedy about the man's sentient iPhone. It's like torturing
him. That was the worst trailer I think I've ever seen.
It might have been the worst trailer I've ever seen.
It did seem like a fake trailer.
It seemed like a fake trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
But Gemini Man, like, when I saw that trailer, I was like, sold. I'm there. I'm in the theater. And you know what? Like I said, you could do a lot worse. You could do a lot worse than Gemini Man. So my wholehearted recommendation for you all to go see Gemini Man, please do not send me hate mail after you see it.
I do not share that sentiment. I would say definitely watch the trailer for Gemini Man to get, you know, what you need from the, you know, digital de-aging. And then, you know, do something else. Play outside, you know.
Read a book.
Go for a walk, you know.
All right, I think that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week, where we're going to review whatever comes out next week. I think one of these days we're going to actually have to get on top of that so we can do actual teases for future episodes. But until that point, everybody, have a great rest of your morning. We will see you next time.
See ya.
Bye. Later. See ya.